Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening to The Art of Image. I'm Dan Phillips. This program is focused on personal image development. These shows will discuss topics ranging from custom tailoring to business attire to communication and everything in between. Stay tuned. This is The Art of Image.
Joining us. Today is July 19th, 2010. We're here in San Francisco, and on today's broadcast, we have Parker Geiger, who is president and founder of the Chuva Group. The Chuva Group is an image development center that for the last 25 years has worked with thousands of people in helping them with their personal presence. Chuva Group's client base also includes quite an impressive list of Fortune 500 companies, CNN, AT&T, and Coca-Cola, just to mention a few. Parker Geiger, welcome to The Art of Image.
Thank you, Daniel. How are you this afternoon?
Very good.
Great.
Today's topic, Parker, is about something that we've all heard of with increasing intensity over the years, and that's personal image branding. Both mm-hmm. offline and online. So, you know, whether you're in business or not, personal image branding has become an important facet of our lives. We just can't get away from it. So, with that being said, let's begin at the beginning.
Okay.
What is personal branding?
Well, you know, ever since, you know, workers have been in the workplace, they've been doing personal branding. It's really the new years have pegged it as impression management, and there's different levels to what that means. But basically, impression management is a way that people manage the impressions that others form of them. So sometimes we think of it in terms of behavior, sometimes dress, sometimes presence, but in our today's world, it encompasses everything. So it's really it's just a new defined buzzword which we've done for years. However, what's happening is now we're getting more concise.
I see. Well, you mentioned impression management. What are just, you know, briefly some of the ways that we manage impressions of others?
Well, if you think about this, for example, I always give an example of this. You know, it's we start out really gung-ho and ready to go and how we manage that impression, and then we kind of forget about it after a while until a red flag comes up or, you know, we get laid off or something, there's an issue in the workplace. But it's like a first date. You know, when you have that very first date, you're excited, you get up, you shower, you know, put the cologne perfume on, look in your best and put your best foot forward, and you go on that date. 3 to 5 years later, you're dating the same person, you get on a date, and you're like, okay, do I have to shower for this date? You know, those kind of things. And so I kind of compare it to that, but it gives people a visual of how important it is to stay on top of that and what it does. So, for example, in ways to manage the impressions that others form of us, one way is our dress. You know, we are going to buy clothes, so why not buy the right fabric, style, and colors for us that really enhance our professionalism? Another way to manage is our emotions, emotional intelligence. It's a big one. I'll tell you, it's been around for a while. Daniel Goleman is the one who kind of coined it all back in the mid-90s. But they basically went around the world and said, okay, the IQ test was created to be a predictor of successful people. And when they went around the globe in all industries, what they found out was the most successful people had average IQs. What they possessed, they were high in emotional intelligence, and it's really all about managing your own emotions. So on a daily basis, we're always managing our emotions. I mean, for most of us, wouldn't it be great to be at the office and really tell our boss or our subordinates or our peers how we really feel just to get it off our chest? But we don't do that because it would create havoc in the workplace. It's kind of like laws. The reason why we have law in society is to maintain peace and let everybody know what's expected of you. It's the same thing that we do in the workplace. So emotional intelligence is a huge one. But here's the key to emotional intelligence. You can't have good emotional intelligence until you really know who you are, so you can understand how to manage those emotions, and then understand behavior in other people, and then how to manage that relationship, because it all comes down to relationships. So those are some key areas where people actually manage the impressions that others form of them on a daily basis.
Great. Definitely a lot there that we can dig into in a future program.
Mm-hmm.
Going on with this here, what would you say is the most important aspect of developing a personal brand?
Wow. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of great reasons and a lot of important reasons. But I think for me is to know that this is it's a business. And I'm a right-brain person, and my biggest challenge in creating a business is running a business, because right-brain people are creative. They don't care to, you know, balance a checkbook. But the left-brain people are all about the numbers, and they sometimes leave out the people of the industry, you know, or the client. So it's about a balance. And as a right-brain person, I would say to the person, create, because a lot of these people in this new social media age are very creative. That's why they call it the starving artist. You're a great artist, but you can't sell it because you're not packaging it, you're not marketing it, because you're not a salesperson. You're an artist, right? So
yeah.
I always say to a person, the first thing is recognize it as a business. And for those left-brain people, remember you got to keep the personal side into it, you know, but also for people who are on the right side need to learn how to run it as a business. And then for the people that are on the for the right side person to also understand, it doesn't need to just look aesthetically good. It's got to sell. So it's a process. So it's all, for me, it's all about balance. So you've got to really recognize, okay, in this business world, I'm not asking someone to be a business person. I'm just asking them to surround themselves with people who are lacking in their skill sets to make it successful. You know, having synergy around you in a team is not having everybody thinking the way you do, because if that's the case, I would have been gone a long time ago. So what I did was I brought other people that had other talents I do not possess to help make it work. So number one would be that it's definitely a business.
Okay. And then you want to bring those people in that can kind of round out your personality as well. Is that what,
absolutely.
Is that what you're saying?
And round out your skill sets, you know.
Okay.
Because, you know, that's why it gets back to knowing yourself. That's another area I want to touch on. You got to know yourself. That was probably the one I struggled with the most when you asked that question. What's more important, to recognizing it as a business or to recognizing that you've got to know yourself? Otherwise, you can't package and market your skill sets and talents. And I think what's really important, if I may, Daniel, touch on
sure.
this for a second. You know, there's a lot of flack out there about people talking about that individuals are not a brand. You know, they're not products. Well, they are products. I mean, even corporations, God forbid, calls it human resources. They capitalize on the talents that people bring to the table. For me, that's a little cold.
That's right, yeah.
You know, I liked it better when they called it, you know, personnel. It was more personal. But the fact is that I've got talents and skill sets that I bring to the table. And when I go out and I go on an job interview, I'm selling my product. They're going to pay
sure.
me X amount of dollars every week or every 2 weeks for the skill sets and talents that I bring to the table. So for anybody out there that's saying we're not a product, we are a product, you know.
Yeah.
But we're not that tangible product. I mean, we have emotions and we have feelings and we've got to treat people, you know, from the human side.
Yeah.
But definitely I think it's, you know, knowing yourself is key.
And are there, in knowing yourself, because, I mean, I think there's a lot of us who are really trying to figure that out. And so are there methods we can use to discover ourselves or know ourselves better?
Absolutely. There's just tons of things you can do. I think the best thing to do that I'd like to communicate to the listeners is keep it simple. Don't complicate it. It's not brain surgery. You know, when people do assessments to find out their personalities or behaviors or their values, 9 times out of 10, I've never had a client go, wow, this doesn't represent me at all. You know, it does represent them. What they need to do is learn to understand who they are so they can learn to communicate that to other people. And I'll give you an example of what we use is the DISC system. We do DISC and values. DISC stands for dominance, influencer, steadiness, and compliance. And this has been studied, I think it came out in 1928. There have been in the past, the patent for the DISC assessment ran out. So there's a lot of DISC assessments out there, so the person really needs to know they're getting a qualified, instrument for this. But this tells a person, how they respond to challenges and how they influence others and how they live by rules or not live by rules. And a prime example is I am a high person. I'm an extrovert. And I'm a high D driver. But what's interesting about that is that I am I don't live by the rules. I live by the seat of my pants. I'm not an organized person. I have to keep it an outlook. So when I understand that, look, these are my challenges, these are my red flags. So how can I stop my red flags from being a disaster? And if I understand that, I can modify it. Another example, as you can already tell, I'm an expressive. So, for years, I just thought I was a great salesperson. I talked a lot. But a great salesperson has to listen, and that was a huge threshold for me and awareness. And I went through my second level awareness from unconsciously incompetent to being conscious of that I need to listen more.
Well, great. Now, we've got an email here from someone who, interesting question. They want to know, and this is from Mary. She'd like to know, does gender play a role in the sort of branding you create? I worded that wrong. Does one's gender play a role in the sort of branding you create?
I think my first response to that would be no. It's professional to professional. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't, that there's not certain areas that your gender plays a role in your brand and how you package and marketing. But I still think that you still have to incorporate the same elements and process and procedures in creating that brand. So I'm not so sure that it would, doesn't really determine if you're male or female. But when it comes to packaging and marketing and your social media, there's absolutely a difference. If I'm a female and I'm selling shea butter to the female clients, I'm going to make my website prettier and more feminine or more holistic, whatever it may be. In terms of that, but in terms of male and female roles and how you create your personal brand, no, it's about it's about being an individual and following the process and procedures in it.
Okay, that's great question. Pretty straightforward. if for instance you run a business, how do you separate your personal branding from your company branding? I know there's a lot of people out there who are really kind of confused about that because everything's out there, not in the open. When you're using one of these social platforms, are there any instances where you might want to blend the two, your personal and business?
Well, I think people have to look at what they're doing with their personal brand. I would say, most people that are out there, there's two types of employees. There's the ones who work for themselves, professionals, the ones who work for themselves, and the others who work for another company. So if you're working for another company, you should still be creating your personal brand because the whole idea, like the social media concept, is you can't sell in the social media world. It's giving content and information, and people seek you out. But if you declare yourself as the expert in service care, and you do articles and you talk about it and you become the guru in that industry, if you ever get laid off in your job, chances are you're going to have other people calling you to want to come or even seek you out while you're still employed. But, you're actually creating that dynamic. You're the expert in what you do. And there's ways of getting your word out there, through social media. You can do stuff for your company's newsletter. You can work in the community, nonprofit. Ways of connecting your personal brand with your company's brand, the one that you work for. But then if you're the type of person who's an entrepreneur and has their own business, your personal brand absolutely has everything to do with your company brand.
Okay.
And you can blend those two. I think it's a very dangerous world right now. I don't think it's a dangerous world for your baby boomers, but your E-generation, absolutely. That's the X, Y, and Z. I call it the E-generation because they grew up with electronics in their ear or their hands. And those are the ones you have to really watch out because – what they're putting on MySpace and Facebook and things like that can be a real issue. that you've got to keep that personal. There's certain parts of your personal life that needs to be transparent and authentic, but they don't need to know every second of the day what you're doing with your family. And you know, you got to really decide what is real personal and what's personal that I can expose myself to the public. I recently heard about a young lady who was calling in sick at work, and she was sick for like 5 days. And on her Facebook, she was posting pictures of her party in New York. Well, guess what? She got fired. You know, so you have to be very careful when you're, you know, what does personal mean to you? I think that would be my question I would ask myself.
Okay. Now, Parker, what are some of the most common errors people make when developing a personal brand?
Well, there's three areas that I feel are very critical for professionals in order to market themselves and to create their success potential. Not being successful, but reach beyond that status quo. And it's come down to visibility, image, and performance. And I think that this is a key part of a major area people make in developing their brand, is that they'll focus on one area and not the other. May I expand on the three of those a little bit?
Sure.
Okay. Visibility is, by the way, we actually did a non-scientific survey and found out, we called the VIP success potential model. And we found out that 10% is one's performance, 30 is their energy, 60 is visibility. Now, I didn't say to be successful. To be successful, you got to perform. This kind of goes with that understanding that you've got to perform at a certain level to keep your job. But if you want to excel beyond the competition. So visibility is all about it's about self-marketing and reputation. You know, if people – you can have a great product. Just like think of yourself as that product and nobody knows about you. How are you going to sell it? You know, drug companies have sales reps in the field every day seeing doctors every day because there's 10 drugs that can basically do the same thing. What script are they going to write for that, you know, for that patient? And the one that's probably the most foremost on their mind is probably who they're going to write for, unless the drug can actually do something better than another drug. So it's visibility, you know, getting out there. I would ask, that's what social media is all about.
So you would say that visibility is number one then? I mean, in the hierarchy of this?
Absolutely. It's 60%. 60%. Mm-hmm. Because it's all about out there.
So if that's the case, then how do you self-market yourself better so that you are more visible? I mean, are there certain techniques that one can use for this?
Yeah, there's definitely offline and online things you can do. Offline, like I said, go to your company and ask to write an article in the newsletter, in your company newsletter. They're always looking for new information. Do something inside your community that reflects and gives you visibility, but do something like nonprofits, huge, especially here in Atlanta. It's a huge thing. I was on a board for 6 years, and I was on a very powerful board with some high-key people. You know, they opened a lot of doors for me. They just opened doors. It's about building those relationships. Online is social media and marketing. I mean that is the best visibility you can get, or it can hurt you because the other side of visibility is reputation. So if you got a reputation of people, you know, and like say for example, you never deliver your projects on time, you're always missing deadlines, you're always late, you're never wrong, you're always right. I mean, those people are going to hold you back. They're going to say, you know, I don't want Park on this project. He's always late, or he always has all the answers, or whatever it is, and they start pulling me off projects. Well, that's hurting my potential of what I can do.
Yeah.
So that's the visibility part. The image part. Offline and online again. Offline is I refer to it as the look. Do you look the part? Do you dress for your business? Do you dress for your title? Do you dress for your company? And do you dress to meet your customers' expectations? But here's the key. Do you do it in a way that you don't lose your own sense of style and identity? And I think that's what we're going to talk about maybe in our next interview.
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
And I suppose that being consistent with that image is also very valuable.
Absolutely. And that's why online visibility is important, because if you are selling something and you don't show up that way, you know, you've seen the TV service, And the lady's sitting there, and she's going, when was this picture taken? He said, oh, back in college when I was a football player. You know, and it's 40 pounds heavier, didn't look at all the same. You know, you want to be authentic and give what's out there, because that comes back to reputation again.
Okay. And then lastly, you mentioned performance.
Yeah, and that's where the emotional intelligence comes in. You know, how are you going to how do you handle and manage your emotions? Because that's how you interact with people, and that's huge, you know. And that's where you really want to step it up a notch. And even, for example, even online is critical because, for example, let's say you're online and you own a restaurant and you had an event at your restaurant and a client happened and they started posting on your Facebook or Twitter the experience, you know, and you did everything in your power to make it great and you spent a lot of money and all this stuff. And, you know, the first response can be like reactive instead of responsive. So you've got to use your emotional intelligence online as well. You know, dear customer, I'm so sorry you've had this feeling, this experience. I'd like to make that, you know, make it up to you. May we speak offline on the phone so I can resolve this issue for you and then take it offline, as opposed to writing back and saying, you know, you're just not appreciative whatsoever and don't come back to my restaurant. That's not emotional intelligence.
Okay. Well, how do we improve our emotional intelligence? I mean, how do we get to a point where we can manage our emotions in the best way?
Well, there's some books out there you can read about how that works. I think the best way is knowing your behavior, understanding what you bring to the table. And I'm talking about the DISC system, for example. That's huge because you know how you deal with certain things and how you're going to react or respond. And for me, if you understand that, well, I think the first step is to go back to self-awareness. You know, I use what I call the four levels of self-awareness. And the first one is unconsciously incompetent. We don't know what we don't know. And then the second level is you become conscious about it and say, okay, I do talk too much, but let me put some skill sets into play. So for me, for example, to manage my emotions more was not to be so reactive, not finishing people's sentences, listening so I can respond and not react. So then I get to that third level of self-awareness, which is consciously competent. You know, I'm aware and I'm put some tools into place to manage my emotions more effectively, but my ultimate goal is to get to the level of consciously subconscious competent. In other words, it just kind of reprograms, becomes second nature to me to listen more. You know, I call it the center of balance. You know, if you look at a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being extroverted, 1 being introverted, and 5 is the balance of center of balance. A lot of people in your charts will tell you, you know, you're a 4, a 5, or a 6. For me, I'm a 10. I'm far from that area, so I have to work at it every single day. So that's how you really, really understand about how to control your emotions. It's understanding yourself and how you react or respond in these different elements so that you can become conscious of that. And that's the first step. You've got to get away from unconsciously incompetent to consciously incompetent, to say, I'm going to take responsibility with this. I'm sorry I waited till I was 40, but it's never too late kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's great. I mean, there are some tools out there that can help us achieve that. You mentioned the DISC survey.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And where can someone access that? Or
Companies like ours do those profiles. You just want to make sure, like, for example, our Dr. Bonsetter, I think it is, he is the one who has this instrument that we use, and it's valid. It's very valid. He's been doing it for many, many years. And the system, like, they could come to us and say, I want to take an assessment. We can do coaching on the phone with them as well to kind of help them with that. It's a great coaching tool. That's inexpensive because you can do it on phone, too, and there's no travel and things like that. But you want to make sure it's valid. That's one place you can find it. The other assessment that we do that's critical is what we call the workplace motivators. It's a value system. And it's really about what motivates you to do what you do. So if you think about the tip of an iceberg, that's what people see. It's somebody's behavior. What they don't see is what's the baseline of that iceberg. And that is what are your values? How do you spend your time? How do you spend your money? What's important to you? You know, and that's what people don't see. They see it subconsciously, but they don't really see it. It's not as visual as your behavior. And I'll give you a good example. I have a gentleman right now who is a very high I and D on his DISC, but he's very high social on his values, and he's also very high. Let me back up. He's a very high C and a very high S on his disc. That's the person who's very steady. He's got to live by the rules, and he likes rules and regulations. Now, if you look at his values, he's very high social, and he's also second to that. You know, your second one colors your first one. He is very high traditional. And so he's having trouble in his workplace right now because in the environment where he's working, it's working against his traditions and values, and it's creating havoc in his own soul. So he's having to leave there because they're not doing the right thing. It's not putting blame on someone else. It's just recognizing, this is who I am. This is why I'm uncomfortable with this. Let me go find a place that I'm more comfortable in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Moving along rather quickly here. Okay. At what age should someone begin to think about personal branding?
Well, yeah, I think some parents have gotten neurotic about it. They start them in preschool and the private preschools and get all that. And that's really what they're doing. They're starting the whole personal branding because they're starting their network of people and all of that. But let's just talk about, you know, the normal folks in society. I think that, high school students, for example, starting in junior high, you start thinking about college. That's when you really want to start thinking about it because that's when you got to start, you know, doing community service work. Building your resume, so when you go for an interview at the college or university, you've got these things behind you, you know, as well as your academics. And then definitely in college, as you're developing that and you start developing your networks of people, what kind of industry you want to work in, community service work.
Okay.
That are already in the workplace, that it's never too late to start. Never. It's never too late to start anything. So it could, realistically, if your kids are out there and they're in junior high school and they're starting to be on Facebook and Twitter and all those different aspects, make sure that, make them aware of, look, when someone interviews you for college, don't talk about work because it's too far ahead of their thinking, but interviews for college, they may be looking at what you're doing right now. So does this really how you want to be perceived.
So I suppose that once you get on sign into one of those platforms, really your career and personal branding begins there, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, part like emails, for example. You know, just an email is a part of your brand. Because if you have the consistency of always sending an email out with no relationship building at all, you know, you just say yes, no, get this to me, there's no feeling there at all, then you're going to get that reputation of someone who's kind of cold and aloof. Well, on the other hand, you might get somebody who just talks too much, you know. So,
yeah. Now, as an individual, Parker, how can I, you know, brand myself every day offline?
Well, offline, it's always just making sure that you're managing your professional image and your presence. In other words, when I say presence, it's how you show up, how you interact, engage, how you treat people. It's the emotional intelligence side of things. And that's just in your emails, your correspondence, your phone conversations. Everything you do every day helps add to that picture of what people, when they say your name, you know, what picture do they create in their mind? And that's just really critical. Now, I'm not saying every day you got to think about this, like be conscious on the forefront of your mind. It's just be aware that, you know, you need to, everything you do affects your brand, everything you do.
So which social media tools do you consider most effective for personal branding?
Well, that really, I can answer that two ways. One, it depends on what your age is, what your business is, et cetera. But I think if someone were to ask me what the most effective right now is, YouTube and LinkedIn. Because the internet's going all video. You're seeing websites changing dramatically. Even from a couple years ago, pages are not pages anymore of just copy, copy, copy. People don't read that anymore, you know. So I think that YouTube is very, very effective. I think LinkedIn, for the professionals that we work with, are extremely effective because you're getting networked in with business people, and you're very selective in who you – I mean, I get LinkedIn requests all the time. I don't know the people, and I definitely do not refer them because – or have them on my list because I don't know who they are. It's not important for me to have 100,000 people on my LinkedIn. It's important for me to have qualified people that I've worked with or know that others have worked with that's a referral. Because if I refer you to someone to do a job and they do a poor job, who's that going to reflect back on? Me.
Right.
So it's full circle. My brand's affected again. And then you've got MySpace is more for the younger generations. And then, of course, Facebook. I believe Facebook and YouTube are the two biggest social medias. I think the other one for the business one would be LinkedIn.
Okay. Now, for the small business owner, for them, what is the difference between personal branding and company branding? I mean, is there a real difference between the two? I know that a lot of people have asked me this in the past, and that's the question I keep getting all the time.
Well, if you own your own company, it is your brand, and you are the face of that brand. Most small companies are not 100 employees or more. It's small companies. There's a lot of people who just are consultants. That's what I did for years. You know, it's just that one person, maybe a couple people. But when people ask that question, I think it's for the people who are more like three people in their company or smaller, you know, or they have strategic partners. And I think that at that point, your personal brand is everything because it is your company. Absolutely.
Okay.
On the other hand, if I work for Coca-Cola or Assurance Solutions, and I'm out doing a sales call or entertaining a client, you know, from that company, I am Assurance Solutions. You know, Parker Geiger is Assurance Solutions to the customers. So how I act, behave, dress, interact with someone is going to reflect back on my organization. And trust me, I have clients who get calls all the time saying, hey, this person was acting inappropriate at this event. And then it makes Assurant look bad, or it makes CNN look bad, or ABC company. It doesn't matter what company you work for and how well known they are. It can absolutely hurt the company.
Okay. Now, tell us the three words that come to mind when you define a successful branding process.
Well, I just say that's called the ACT approach: authentic, consistency, and transparent. You got to be authentic. You just got to put it out there. You got to be real. You got to be real with yourself and put it out there. Doesn't mean you have to be perfect. Doesn't mean you don't have flaws. It just means if you say this is what you can do and what you can offer, then do it. Don't put a false page out there because that or false face or a false website or a false product, because you won't survive, especially in the internet age. You got to be consistent. You got to be consistent with the processes, the procedures, the look, the feel, the taste of everything offline and online. Consistency is very key. It's a big challenge for a lot of people because, you know, you're out there trying to sell and you're always working or you're selling or whatever it is, and you don't have 9 hours a day to put into your branding. But you just got to be consistent in what that looks and feels like. And then be transparent, you know. I think that it doesn't mean you
now,
have
how do you
to
define,
reveal.
How would you define transparency? I mean, with respect to being authentic, how do you define that?
Well, transparency is be real about, I mean, don't have any hidden agendas. You know, most of us get our cell phone bill, and we're supposed to be paying $60 a month, and it ends up being $95 because of the taxes and this and that. And, you know, they reveal it at the very end of the little ads on TV, or they read it so fast it doesn't even make sense. I mean, you just got to be transparent. Don't try to do something and then do something else. You know, because if you're authentic with yourself, you should be able to be transparent with yourself. If you're not transparent, you're not being authentic.
Okay.
So being transparent is letting people know, see what you have to offer, and there's no hidden agenda there. I've heard nightmares from small companies who offered the moon, you know, and knowing the whole time they couldn't do it. But they said, we're going to do this, but they were going to do it all, but they were not very transparent in who was on the team and who was qualified and things like that. So transparency is really key.
Okay. That seems to be one of the, hallmarks for producing real real long-lasting results in your business or even in your own personal life.
Absolutely.
Now, is marketing the same thing as branding? I know people get those two confused, and I'm pretty sure there's a distinct difference.
Well, I mean, you know, there's you can brand a product, but you still have to sell it. So they're not the same, you know.
Okay.
It's, you know, any brand you create, you think about the Diet Coke, all right, that's a brand, and they have other brands that are actual tangible products, but they still have to package it, the colors, the shape, the size. I mean, large companies spend millions of dollars on test marketing that stuff. You know, what size should the can be? Should it be, you know, should the bar set be round or square? You know, that type of thing. I mean, example, Clinique has a skincare line for men and women, and they have a cleansing bar. It's the same product, identical, but they package it differently. One's square and one's round. The one for the square is for the men because straight lines are more dominant. The ones that are curved are for women. It's more passive and more feminine. So, I mean, there's ways that people package their products all the time, but branding is one thing. The packaging that brand is just one part of branding, and marketing is another part of branding.
Okay. Well, great. Look at that. It looks like we're out of time.
Oh.
Thank you, Parker Geiger, for being on the show. It's been a real great first show. We plan on having Parker on next week to discuss in detail a real professional image. Be sure to join us for that. If you have more questions about the Chuva Group and its services, you can visit their website at www.chuvagroup.com, and that's spelled chuvagroup.com, or you can give them a call. And Parker, is there a number that they should
use? Yes, they can reach me. My direct line number is 678-705-2366. Again, that's 678-705-2366.
Okay. Now remember that our next program is scheduled for July 26th at 1 p.m. If you have any burning questions or recommendations about how this show or the next one, send them to us via email at artofimagetalk@gmail.com. We look forward to communicating with you. This Art of Image program has